It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station from here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have fair skies, 50 degrees. Out at the airport, they are showing west winds to 18, gusting to 24, 52% humidity, and 10 miles of visibility. Look for sunny skies for the rest of the day, west winds to 20, gusting to 30. Partly cloudy overnight with a low of 40, west winds to 15, gusting to 30. And sunny tomorrow too, with a high near 50, west winds to 20, gusting to 30. Coming up on the Midday Report, all four gubernatorial candidates had a debate last night. We'll have some details. In Alaska, it's illegal to be sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. However, some sentences are so long that that is the effect. And a man on the Kenai Peninsula is making plastic into lumber. Those stories, plus checking a guitar out at the library in Petersburg, after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The search is on for Britain's third prime minister this year. Only 45 days after replacing Boris Johnson, Liz Truss is resigning.
Given the situation, I cannot deliver the mandate on which I was elected by the Conservative Party.
Just yesterday, Truss defiantly rejected boos and jeers from members of the opposition in Parliament, who called for her resignation when she declared she was a fighter, not a quitter. But the financial turmoil that arose from her tax cut policies generated a wave of discontent from even her own party that Truss was unable to overcome. In London, Villa Marx reports the Conservative Party is now moving forward with a process by which legislators will select a new leader and ultimately prime minister.
The UK's shortest-serving premier, Liz Truss, said she'll stay on until her party picks a successor. But after a months-long campaign over the summer left her in Downing Street, her Conservatives once more changed their selection rules. The party chairman said potential candidates will have to enjoy support from 100 legislators to qualify for the parliamentary voting rounds, meaning three contenders at most. Nominations will close Monday and a new leader announced by next Friday, with the possibility grassroots party members may vote online to decide any runoff. No major figures have confirmed they'll run, but already leaders from opposition political parties are demanding a general election instead of what some call a conservative coronation. For NPR News, I'm Willem Marx.
Even before Italy's new hard right government has been formed, it's been shaken by one of its partners, former Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi. In remarks leaked to the press, the 86-year-old media mogul gushed over Russian President Vladimir Putin and blamed Ukraine for starting the war there. Here's NPR's Silvia Poggioli.
The new government is to be headed by Giorgia Meloni, Italy's first female prime minister. She's staunchly pro-Ukraine, but faces international skepticism since her party's roots are in the ashes of fascism. In his remarks leaked to the press, Berlusconi waxed poetic about the Russian leader. For my birthday, said Berlusconi, Putin sent me 20 bottles of vodka and a very kind letter, adding the Russian president singled me out as the first of his five true friends. Meloni issued a statement stressing Italy's staunch role in the Atlantic Alliance. Whoever disagrees, she added, cannot be a part of this government. Silvia Poggioli, NPR News, Rome.
The White House says it can confirm that Iran has sent dozens of drones to Russia to use in Moscow's war in Ukraine, and that Iranian trainers and technical support personnel had been on the ground in Crimea, the area Russia illegally annexed in 2014, to help Russian military personnel. Iran denies involvement. At last check on Wall Street, the Dow is down 90 points before the close. This is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. For only the second time this election season, all four candidates running to be the governor of Alaska participated in a debate. Incumbent Republican Governor Mike Dunleavy is the apparent frontrunner and bore many attacks on the other two candidates. In his closing remarks, Dunleavy argued that Alaska is better off today than it was 4 years ago.
Crime is at a 41-year low. Troopers and VPSOs are up. We have a historic PFD. We've cut our operating budget by 10%, other than in education and public safety.
Democrat Les Guerra directly contradicted many of Dunleavy's assertions and painted a dire picture of Alaska. Guerra said high oil revenue driven by the war in Ukraine made this year's historically high permanent fund dividend possible, not the governor.
Governor Dunleavy pats himself on the back for the worst school crisis in Alaska history, for the worst mental health crisis in Alaska history, for rape numbers going up while he's been governor, even though he told you the opposite.
Dunleavy and fellow Republican Charlie Pierce used some of their time highlighting former Governor Bill Walker's use of the veto to slash permanent fund dividends in 2016. Walker, an independent, said he cut dividends amid extremely low oil prices and helped pass legislation to make dividends sustainable. He said now making the dividends predictable is one of the state's biggest challenges.
We've gone through $20 billion of savings in the last 10 years. My concern is with high dividends, right now we have been put on in the express lane for high taxes in Alaska.
The fourth candidate, Republican Charlie Pierce, was far behind the other candidates in the August primary election with 6.6%. The four candidates have all committed to participate in one more candidate forum before Election Day. They're set to appear together during the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention in Anchorage on Saturday. Election Day is November 8th. In Alaska, it's illegal to be sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. But one woman whose husband is incarcerated in Kenai says long sentences like his can act as virtual life sentences when the chance of exiting the system are so slim. And she's pushing legislation to give juvenile offenders an earlier chance at freedom. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
Brian Hall is part of a group of several men that grew up in Alaska's correctional system together and refer to each other as family. Brian, now 46, is serving a portion of his 159-year sentence at Wildwood Correctional Complex in Kenai. He's been incarcerated since he was 17 on charges of killing two people. And his earliest chance at parole is still decades away. His wife, Angela Hall, is leading the charge on legislation that would make sure Alaskans like him have an earlier chance at freedom.
My interest in the Second Look legislation started when I met my husband, my now husband.
Statewide, there are 30 people currently incarcerated who were convicted of their crimes as juveniles, according to a spokesperson with the Alaska Department of Corrections. Senate Bill 114 was introduced last year and would give those committed as kids a chance at discretionary parole review after their first 15 years serving. The bill wouldn't guarantee parole for those people, but it would give them a chance in front of the Alaska Parole Board. And if rejected, they could come back to the board after 2 years.
This way, they could develop a relationship with the parole board. The parole board could give recommendations of what they would like to see, and they could do these things in the meantime, and then hopefully be parole ready the next time they came up before the board.
Alaska is one of 25 states that doesn't allow life sentences without paroles for juveniles. But Angela says long periods of jail time, like the one her husband is serving, are virtual life sentences.
A virtual life sentence is basically a life sentence because it's anyone who's been sentenced to 50 plus years, which means you're being sentenced to death by incarceration.
She says the first chance Brian has to see the parole board will be when he's in his 70s.
The life expectancy for individuals who are incarcerated is much lower than that.
And that's just when he would be eligible. In 2020, the Alaska Parole Board accepted just 16% of the applications it received for parole. Megan Edge is a spokesperson with the American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska. She says the state's prison population is an aging one, in part because fewer people are being granted discretionary parole today. And she's concerned about the higher-than-usual number of deaths in corrections custody this year. Edge says some of the 15 people who died in custody in 2020 were serving lengthy sentences.
So it's incredibly sad, especially in a state that doesn't have the death penalty. We're still committing people to death by incarceration.
She says young people often have a better shot at rehabilitation than people who were incarcerated when they were older. Angela says her husband, Brian, has turned his life around since he was first sentenced 3 decades ago. The two got married and celebrated their 10th anniversary this year. Brian got his GED and became a dog obedience instructor. He's Cherokee and keeps his spiritual and cultural practice alive as much as he can from Wildwood.
You hear about people getting sentenced all the time, but you don't really hear about, you know, what has happened to those people after 20 plus years, you know?
Angela says she doesn't know what's next for the legislation. Democrat Minority Leader Senator Tom Begich was the bill's sponsor last session. But the legislation didn't get a hearing, and Begich isn't running for another term.
We're not sure if there's going to be, you know, support for it at this point. So it just really depends on what happens with the elections.
Edge, with the ACLU, says the bill fits squarely into the broader prison reform work she's spearheading as part of the organization's new Alaska Prison Project. That initiative formed last month with the goal of reducing the number of incarcerated Alaskans and improving conditions for those who are already in the system. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Millions of tons of plastic ends up in the ocean each year. On the Kenai Peninsula, one man is trying to change that by giving plastic waste a useful second life.
Beginning this summer, the Kenai Peninsula has had a new way to recycle its plastics. Engineer Patrick Simpson collects used plastics from Seward, Soldotna, and Homer to keep them out of the ocean and to turn them into recycled lumber. The plastic is collected and stored in large bags called super sacks, which hold about 75 pounds of plastic each. The super sacks are emptied into a grinder where the plastic is ground down into smaller pieces. Then it's melted down and formed into recycled lumber of a variety of sizes. Just this week, Simpson produced his first pieces of lumber. The operation is housed in a 53-foot trailer. In the first 2 days of production, Simpson created 15 pieces of lumber in a variety of sizes, which were made from roughly 300 pounds of recycled plastic.
It takes a lot of plastic to make a 2x4, but there's a lot of plastic in the world.
Simpson won a highly competitive grant from the Environmental Protection Agency last year to convert plastic waste into recycled lumber. The project is currently based out of Seward. Simpson has an initial buyer for the lumber, Anchorage-based freighting company American Fast Freight. The company will use the lumber to hold freight in place on the back of a trailer, where recycled lumber is a better alternative because it's not prone to transporting pests like real wood, and it does not degrade as quickly outside. The lumber created through this process is intended for outdoor use, like building a deck or industrial work. Simpson says it holds up well in Alaska's wet coastal climate.
If you just talk about plastic lumber versus traditional lumber, there's like a 3-to-1 difference in lifespan.
Simpson gets his plastic from two main sources: public collection and donations from industrial corporations. Much of the plastic used in this project comes from thread protectors, devices commonly used on the North Slope. Hilcorp has sent 180,000 pounds of thread protectors made of desirable, high-quality plastic to Simpson. The rest of the plastic comes from communities. Those in the Kenai-Soldotna area can participate in upcycling their plastic waste with the help of local nonprofit Cook Inlet Keeper, which works with Simpson to collect plastic on the inlet side of the peninsula and deliver it to him. Ben Betger, energy organizer at Cook Inlet Keeper, says the Soldotna collection program has been a success. Every 2 weeks, Cook Inlet Keeper collects around 8 to 10 super sacks of plastic waste to deliver to Simpson. Becker says the program has been great for the community, People have been excited to participate, and projects like this one that manage the flow of plastic ocean waste are a major priority for Cook Inlet Keeper stakeholders. Looking forward, one of Simpson's goals for the project is to create a mobile device that would process the plastic in order to limit freighting costs and deal with Alaska's remoteness.
In Alaska, and I was born and raised in Cordova, so I'm very familiar with how remote Alaska can be. And communities can be collecting this plastic, but moving that plastic from the community to some other place where it could be converted into something else is very cost prohibitive.
Simpson's solution is to stockpile recycled plastics in different communities around Alaska and bring in the equipment to convert it a couple times a year. And he has his sights set on the Kenai-Soldotna area as the next place to start stockpiling recycled plastics. He's on the lookout for a storage site, maybe off of Kalifornsky Beach Road, to keep the plastics.
Once I find a location, then the next task would be, well, we'd like to get more people involved in the recycling program and get more plastic on that lot so we can get as much as we possibly can for creating more recycled plastic lumber.
Simpson currently has stockpiles in Seward and Palmer, but he's also hoping to stockpile plastics in other places around the peninsula, including Homer and Ninilchik. In Kenai, I'm Riley Board.
When people think of libraries, they think of books. But in Petersburg, the public library has more options. It's running a beginning guitar class, and kids can check out guitars just like books.
All right, you ready?
No.
So, I want you to remember the chord is you're just going to, if you, the cheater A is to just smash your finger down on that second fret.
That's teacher Dan Sullivan, and this is their second guitar class. The kids are working on one of the four Halloween songs they'll be learning over a month's time. Sullivan says that's a pretty ambitious curriculum.
So the expectation really isn't that they walk out of here mastering four songs, but they get an introduction to the guitar, pick up a few rhythm tricks. Some of them will practice hard and they'll really take off, and others will get a little bit and maybe stick with it.
The class is meant to be a quick intro and a way for kids to take advantage of the library's instruments. Kids can borrow one of the eight guitars to practice. Here's Kari Peterson, the library program coordinator.
Our thinking behind it was it's great for parents and kids to get an introduction to an instrument, because instruments and playing instruments is quite an investment. And to be able to have your kid have four lessons and see if that's something that they're really actually interested in and want to pursue, I think you can get a good handle on that.
It also helps families who don't have the resources to buy an instrument. Kids can hang on to those guitars for 6 weeks, and if no one else is waiting for one, they can renew. Sullivan says the size of these guitars are easier for kids to handle.
They're really nice kid guitars. They're classical, nylon string, easy on the fingers, even though they all complained today about how much pain they were in.
Instruments can have a steep learning curve, so frustration can be a roadblock in these early days. Sullivan knows from experience. He first picked up a guitar around fifth grade.
Let's see, I think I learned a Simon and Garfunkel song and had a really horrible guitar that was really, really hurt, seriously hurt my hand, so I gave it up for a while, and then I came back at it.
Something unmentionable happened to that first guitar, but Sullivan went back to playing as an older teenager. For the same reasons, he's created a beginner guitar curriculum that's easy to jump into. It emphasizes rhythm over playing the right chords.
You saw us doing a lot of drumming on the guitar to keep the beat. That way, if you're not really quick on changing chords, you can still participate in the song. And it seems to me like that's the fun part, is when you're in a group, when you're playing along with other people, that they get really excited.
The kids in the class have a mix of experience. Beatrice Gallardo says she's brand new.
I just started when this class started.
When this class started, so what do you think?
It's fun. I like it. And I think it helps me learn.
And Silas Stanton Greger played for a couple months before this class.
I think it's a great opportunity for kids to learn to play guitar and have fun learning different chords, different fun songs.
All the kids in the class are using the library's guitars, And Dan says these kid-sized guitars are great for beginner adults, too.
If you're willing to give it a little bit of an effort, it's never too late. You can always pick it up.
Sullivan's class will meet for 2 more weeks at the library. After that, Sullivan and Peterson hope to host another intro class around the beginning of the year. In Petersburg, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
Read diverse, read indie. On Insight Daily Radio, conversations with today's most influential authors from the world of independent publishing. Anatomy of a Hustle, Cable Comes to South Central L.A., by author Clinton Galloway, chronicles the struggles he and his brother faced when trying to bring cable television to South Los Angeles neighborhoods, some of the most poor and disadvantaged neighborhoods in the city. After more than a decade of work, a trip to the U.S. Supreme Court, and several small victories along the way, Clinton and his brother were tragically, ultimately unsuccessful. To make matters worse, in 1993, the U.S. Congress passed a law stating that regardless of the civil rights violations that had occurred during the cable television franchising, there would be no damages allowed against any city in the United States. We spoke with him about this important book.
I'd never written a book before. Well, again, my brother was diagnosed with leukemia about a year after we had the final ruling from the judge. They gave him 1 year to live in 1994. He lived for 15 years, and, you know, as he got towards the end of his life, and he said, hey, you know, this is something I want to make sure we get done. You know, our focus at that point was his health and trying to get him treatment to allow him to stay alive as long as we could. And so we did that as best as we could, and he lived for 15 years when they told him he could live for 1 year. So that was more important than everything else. So after, when he was passing, he said, hey, make sure you do this because it's something that's important. Because not only are we deprived of our rights, but every black person in South Central has been deprived of their rights.
That's author Clinton Galloway on his book, Anatomy of a Hustle. Cable Comes to South Central L.A., which is available wherever books are sold. Read Diverse, Read Indie is presented by the Independent Book Publishers Association.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon, and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 20th day of October, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 8:56. It will set again at 6:51. That will give us 9 hours and 55 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 51 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high on this date was 55, set in 1949 and 1991, and our record low was 22, set in 1966 and in 1974. Presently 50 degrees under fair skies. It is a pretty nice, if a little breezy, day. Right now they are showing west winds at 18, gusting to 24 at the airport, 10 miles of visibility out there, and 52% humidity. Look for sunny skies for today and tomorrow, partly cloudy overnight. West winds to 20, gusting to 30, turning to the southwest tonight and gusting to 30, back to the west tomorrow and gusting to 30. Mostly clear overnight on Friday night and partly cloudy tonight, so it should be fairly good conditions for viewing the Orionid meteor showers, which is peaking tomorrow and Saturday. Here are the upcoming Kodiak Island Borough public meetings. The Assembly will be having its regular meeting in the Assembly Chambers on Thursday, October 20th at 6:30 p.m., and the Assembly will be having a work session in the Assembly Chambers on Thursday, October 27th at 6:30 p.m. All meetings are open to the public, and meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. Assembly meetings are live streamed on the Kodiak Island Borough YouTube channel. Subscribe to get live stream notifications. Absentee in-person voting for the general election will be held in the Assembly Chambers between October 24th and November 7th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Contact the State of Alaska Division of Elections for details at 907-465-3021.
Are you planning to vote in the November 8th general election? If so, your voting location might have changed since you last voted. That's why it's important to make sure you have a voting plan before Election Day on November 8th. Can't make it? Request a by-mail ballot by October 29th or make a plan to vote early in person. Visit elections.alaska.gov to find your polling place and more. This message paid for by the Alaska State Division of Elections.
We just had a high tide here on the east side at 12:07. That was a 6.7-foot tide. Our next low tide will be at 5:44 this evening and be 3.4 feet. Over on the west side, you are about to have a high tide at 12:27 this afternoon, just about 2 or 3 minutes. That will be an 11.1-foot tide in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 6:32 this evening of 4.6 feet. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side. Small craft advisory through Friday. West wind to 25 knots today and seas to 13 feet. For tomorrow, west 25, seas coming down to 10 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through Friday as well. West winds to 25 knots and seas to 7 feet today in the Shelikof. For tomorrow, west 25, seas to 6 feet. The Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak is hosting their new volunteer training, and that is going on today for all volunteers between 5:30 p.m. and 8 p.m. and Saturday, October 22nd, that's Saturday, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. for direct care volunteers. For more information and to register for the training, please visit their website at hpck.org or give them a call at 907-512-0600. This Saturday at the fairgrounds, it's the Harvest Festival and Pumpkin Sale. That's put on by 4-H, a lot of fun for the kids. That'll go from 12 to 2 p.m. at the fairgrounds on Saturday, or until the pumpkins are all sold. It includes the pumpkin patch and hay rides, festive bake sale, kids' activities and games, fall photos, giveaways, and more. Free admission, and they would like you to have a cash or check for the pumpkins. You are cordially invited to the 38th Annual Stiles Clark Auction. That's happening on Saturday as well at 5:30 p.m. at the Afognak Native Corporation Building on Near Island. Seats are limited, and you can get your tickets to the Stiles Clark Auction at their Facebook page. That's S-T-I-L-E-S Clark Auction. This event is for ages 21 and older, so you know it will be fun. Funds go toward Santa to the Villages, local nonprofit organizations, and are used for grants and scholarships. Again, go to the Stiles Clark Auction Facebook page. Kodiak Pathfinder's youth team presents the first annual Community Youth Disaster Preparedness Rally. A Red Cross certification for CPR class is slated for this Sunday at 10 a.m. at 1337 Mylark. That's the Kodiak Seventh-day Adventist Church, which is on the corner of Mylark and Larch. There are 20 spots available. Youth ages 12 to 19 are invited to attend and to participate in the disaster preparedness mission for the entire community. For more information, call Edith at 907-942-9801 or Constance at 907-654-7000. You will also find sign-up sheets at the local Kodiak Teen Center and the Kodiak Parks and Recreation Swimming Pool Community Bulletin Boards. Donations supporting the Youth Community Disaster Preparedness Rally are appreciated. Please join them next Tuesday for the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center Annual Prayer Vigil. That's happening Tuesday at the St. James the Fisherman Episcopal Church. It starts at 5:30 p.m. The vigil is to honor and remember domestic violence victims who have died in the last year and in previous years at the hands of their abusers. Following the vigil will be a dinner and then the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center's annual membership meeting. The vigil begins at 5:30, dinner at 6:30, and the annual membership meeting begins at 7 p.m. RSVPs are requested so they can make enough food. Please contact them at 907-486-6171 or email them at contact@kwrcc.org. Everyone in the community is invited and encouraged to attend both events. And don't forget the downtown businesses will hold the annual Downtown Trick-or-Treat on Friday, October 28th. That's happening from 3:30 to 5 p.m. All of Kodiak's goblins, ghouls, and other trick-or-treaters are invited to wander through participating businesses for treats. The downtown map of participating businesses is at kodiakchamber.org.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.